Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
How are you now? Broadcasting from the VFS studios in Milsons Point in Sydney. You are listening to the All New BIP Show, Season 7, Episode 8. Thank you to everyone who has been a part of the story, and it's been a fantastic story. Global X were our sponsors, and hoping to get them back on board for a while, but we've got a new sponsor, and I'll do a quick read for them a little bit later on as we get into it. All the information in this podcast is general in nature. If you want to do something, speak to a professional advisor about your needs. If you've got any questions, speak to me. I like answering questions. Heath also likes answering questions. He is my guest today, Heath Moss, HLM Investments. Heath, how are you now?
Very well, thanks. Good morning, Jimmy, how are you going?
Yeah, mate, not so bad. I've got sort of my earpiece isn't really working as well as I am, so everyone sounds very crackly. This episode is being recorded in Sydney. That's it, on the 17th of March. It's St. Patrick's Day, 2023. The time right now is 10:34 in the a.m. Sydney time. Mate, now we're going to get into the latest, but this is sort of the new format of the show. First off, I'm going to start with a request to you, Heath, my good friend.
Yep.
Would you do me the honor of taking on a partnership with this show at absolutely no cost to yourself and be my show co-host for an ongoing sort of thing as opposed to a sporadic appearance?
I would be honored. Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you very much. That'd be great. I'm honored by that. Great.
Well, mate, it's going to be good having you on board, and we're going to charge on trying to make it a bit more fun and friendly as opposed to just going into the nonsense that we've just going, okay, here's a guy who's extraordinarily intelligent talking to us about something, but then that's just a start and finish. You can get that information anywhere, and I think that what I'm trying to do with the podcast is change the way that we're talking about stuff and make it a bit more exciting, maybe a bit more punchy as well, that we can do. So everyone, thank you for sticking around for as long as you have. Anyone who's listening, anyone who's still listening, and it's going to be a great thing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kick off and just sort of talk about, obviously the week that was a little bit funny, the way that it's been bookended by central banks coming in and saving the day. We've seen a lot of panic and a lot of strange. I woke up yesterday morning, my wife, who is, she's suffering a little bit of an injury at the moment, but we're also at the same time, can you believe, Heath, that we are, of all the times to do it, we are putting a second level on our house with interest rates where they are. We'll talk about that in a second. Interest rates where they are and building costs also where they are. We have decided to put a second level on our house, and so we're scratching around because we've got to try and move all of our stuff from where we are to a suburb, two suburbs over. And we've got a lot of stuff in our roof. And my wife was in tears saying, James, we're not going to get this done in time because we've got to move in a week.
Yep.
And I looked at the market as it was yesterday morning. I looked at it and I just went, you know what? Today's the day. So I set my laptop up on the kitchen table, day from home, because she needed help anyway, day from home, laptop there, phone in my pocket, and just move stuff. It was about 36 degrees yesterday. I just went, you know what? Let's just go hammer and tongs into it and just move stuff out of my roof into our back flat so that it could all be moved out. And spent an entire day doing that. Absolute sweated buckets. I probably could have. I could have jumped on the winner of the eighth race at Rose Hill yesterday, mate. I had lost that much weight, but look, I did it. And I think the reason why I did it, and this is one of those trading mentality things, the reason why I did it was because I didn't want to sit there looking at the market. I didn't want to read too much stuff with all of this negative bad press and everything that was going on. I had my plan. I traded the plan. People were invested well. I went to clients and I said, this is what we're doing. We're sticking with the plan. Everything is okay. Frankie says, relax. Heath, how was your week with that? But that was the way that I stayed off the screens. And I think that was good. And we've seen that sort of come to fruition today, that if you'd panicked this week, you did wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't envy you. It's certainly adding to the stresses of the market. You're stressing yourself out more and probably stressing your marriage a little bit there. But, it is a good week to sort of stay away from the markets a little bit, keep your eyes off the screen, simply because of that volatility. If you sit there in front of a screen all day, you're probably going to make an emotional move and go beyond that trading strategy or that investment strategy you have. People get emotional. You can't avoid it. So the best way to handle that sometimes is just step away, relax, do something unmarket related. You know, I hung out with my wife and my 4-month-old a little bit more this week because, you know, there's nothing I can do about the markets. The market's going to do what it's going to do.
Yeah.
So I had a few calls from clients, concerned about things. You know, we just talked things through and if it changed anything in terms of their investment strategy or profiles, et cetera. And for 99% of them, it didn't. It was just something to ride out. And obviously, maybe get a little bit excited about it because it gives us opportunity. I mean, the market here in Australia, we've come off almost 10% now from where we were, the end of January.
Yeah.
The US, I think, is almost flat this week. So, but we've copped a little bit because of our heavy financial services index. And I think it creates a little bit of opportunity and something to get excited about moving forward.
Yeah, there was a little bit there. And let's just start with the beginning of the week. This is the annoying thing for me is that the plan that I had over the weekend, and I didn't want to concern myself too much this weekend. This is something that I've been talking about a lot this week. And I put it in my note on Monday. Was visions of the GFC. I hate to say, it felt, there were times on the weekend when it felt the chat was very GFC V2.
It did. Yeah. It sort of, because I remember the GFC, and we've got to remember a lot of investors out there didn't experience the GFC. I mean, a lot of investors are around that 30 year old mark. You know, the GFC was well over a decade ago, and they would have missed all that. So, but us older timers, more experienced investors, we certainly remember that. And it certainly felt a little bit like that. But I think the authorities acted very swiftly and promptly and did the right thing.
With the bailout, was it Heath? Did you just say bailout?
No, I didn't say bailout. There was no
bailout. It was a bailout.
There was no bailout. It's simply, depositors.
How do you not say this is?
Depositors getting what is rightfully theirs, their money. They didn't do any investing. They simply parked their money in a bank where, if we want confidence in our financial systems, your money in a bank should be safe.
That's right. You're a bank. Okay, yeah. you've got these bonds. You've got these bonds that have been hammered. You haven't adequately hedged that risk.
Yep.
It's easy for us to sit here, armchair guys, and sit here and say that Richmond should have won that game last night, for example. Mate, you get out on the field, it's a whole different story. Everyone's talking as if, that they've had a lifetime of experiences managing risk at a bank. The way that we went from being experts on health crisis to being experts on the Ukrainian conflict to being experts on bank risk overnight is fantastic. Yeah, but the credit, okay, and then all of a sudden, and then the Fed is going to be able to, I don't want to say bail you out, but the Fed is enabling you to trade those bonds in at par.
Well, I mean,
that's a bailout
for the banks, the existing banks, yes. But I'm talking more what has transpired with Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and whatnot. They didn't bail them out. They allowed them to go under. They just made sure depositors' funds were secured. Which I don't think is a bailout. What's happened with Credit Suisse?
No, I think it's a bailout. I think you're right.
I think happened with Credit Suisse is a bailout, 100%, $54 billion going straight to the bank's coffers if they need it to secure their balance sheet. That is 100% bailout, similar to the TARP that happened during the GFC. Whereas, what's happened with Silicon Valley and Signature and possibly First Republic, they did decide something last night, but it could still go under. I think is not a bailout, and it's just securing their financial system and making sure there's confidence in it. Otherwise, you're going to get more runs on these regional banks, and it's going to cause more problems down the track.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit annoying that they sort of have created two tiers of banks now.
Yes.
With the ones that are backed up, the ones that are backed, and the ones that aren't. That sucks.
Yep.
So how much? Here we go. Have a guess. How much has the Fed lending, this new lending facility, how much has been used so far?
Okay, so I know the exact stats on this. I saw the stats this morning. So new lending facility is only $12 billion. That's it, and that sort of matches up with what SVB were in the hole for, $12 billion. But the other facility, the existing facility, which I believe is actually created and backed by insurance premiums paid by the banks into that facility, they've seen $152 billion of withdrawals this week from banks securing their balance sheets, obviously, a lot of these regional banks.
Seems a record high of 152.85, I've got here in the FT.
Yeah, and the Fed itself has expanded its balance sheet by $300 billion, a lazy $300 billion.
Yeah, exactly, so, which is contrary to everything that they were supposed to be doing at this particular part in the cycle. Really annoying sort of stuff that's happened. Okay, so let's just go through. So I've got the FT up in front of me here. Total usage of the Federal Reserve's lending facility swelled by $160 billion in the week ended March 15, underscoring the pressure facing financial institutions following the failure of SVB. So big numbers that we're talking about.
It is.
Balance sheet back up. Look, there's tremors in the market. If you'd asked me, I'm going to say, I've got a friend who says "axed" and it drives me insane. She knows who she is, but I almost said it like that. If you'd asked me at the beginning of the week, I would have said, okay, I reckon that the Fed is probably going to be thinking about charging on with more hikes, because don't forget what Powell had intoned at the beginning, or sorry, it was months ago. It was another one of those times when the rug got pulled out of the market. Remember how it's just like the media goes and jacks up everyone and says, you know what, the pivot's coming, and then Powell came out once a month and just said, no, it's not coming, stop doing
this. Smack them back down.
And this is one of those times that he was very, very firm on it, and he'd intoned, I don't know if he actually used his exact words, but he had intoned that it's easier for me to fix something that breaks by doing this than it is for us to continue to perpetuate this nonsense cycle. This nonsense low money rate, this being able to do it. And you know what? He was right. Something broke from doing this. Jacking yields up, sent bonds to the floor, moved money out, and the collateral just wasn't there. The risk and it was fixed effectively.
Yes,
I'll call it fixed. So far fixed. Okay, it's fixed on the way. It could have been much worse. It could have been not fixed. But he was right. They do have the tools to fix these things. So in that way, I think that they are going to be. I think that he's going to keep on going. For as long as inflation is above their target number, he's going to have to keep on doing what he's doing. What do you think? I think that he's going to keep on doing. I'm now more certain of that now. What are the numbers telling you, Heath? Because I think you're on the other side of this coin at the beginning of the week.
At the moment, to start the week, I think it got as low as around 13% chance of a 25 basis hike next week. That's up to 80% again now, because obviously the market's taken confidence in what's happened over the week from the Fed, etc. But I'm still in the camp they'll pause. They have to pause. It would be hypocritical of them not to pause. They are a small part of this problem. They raise rates so quickly and the yield curve was so steep that it was part of the problem. It caused these bonds to be sold off so much and disrupted the balance sheets of these banks. We got into the situation we are now, and we can argue for forever and a day about whether the Fed was fully responsible for this by doing so much QE, etc. But that could take us all day. So to raise rates again next week, we fly in the face of everything they've just done over the last week, trying to secure the financial system. It would cause yields to rise again.
They've already got the fix ongoing for it. By putting the way that I see it, because they've brought this fix in at being able to say, you know what, your collateral is going to be okay at this bank, because they've brought that in, it means that they can continue to raise.
Yeah, they very well could do. And I mean, whilst I think they should and they will pause, I can see a situation where they raise by 25 basis points and their statement is extremely dovish. They basically say, okay, that's the last one. I mean, it was supposed to be, I think a couple of months ago, Powell said, we only see two more rate hikes in this cycle for the moment, then we're going to take a pause. So this would be that last one anyway. So I could see a case there. But I'm saying they need to pause now. I don't think there's any point of them doing 25 basis points here because they'll probably just be walking it back in Q3 or Q4 anyway. I'm of the strong belief that the US is heading into a recession now, a shallow recession, but a recession nonetheless.
Yeah.
So we're seeing about...
Yeah, I saw your note at the beginning of the week. It was good. Anyone who wants to get a really good note, subscribe to Heath's note if you can. I don't know if you send it out.
It's
good literature, mate. It's really good literature.
Earlier. Thank you. I send it out very wordy. Earlier, and then I post it on social media about 3 or 4 days later because obviously clients have got to get that information first.
Get the edge.
Get that trading edge. So now, I think it would fly in the face of everything they've just talked about in the last week to raise rates, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did. They are so focused on this inflation number. I'm on the point that inflation is gone. We saw the print this week. Core was a little bit stronger than expected, but 70% of the inflation, the rise in inflation was from shelter. In the real world, the last 8 or 9 months, house prices and rents have been falling in the US. It's just because of the way they collate the data and present the data that it's still rising within the data. Services is the problem, the sticky with wages. But even with the NFP last week, we saw wage rises soften. It came in at 0.2% on the month versus the 0.3% expected. So I think there's enough there. We saw retail sales fall by 0.4%. There's enough there pointing to the economy softening and coming into a recession. And I'm very wary of their construction sector over there as well. So I think there's enough there. And add on this banking fiasco. There's enough there for them to put their hands up and say, hey, we're pausing for a little bit. Let the rates flow through.
Okay. Now, I'm going to make a little bit of money for the show.
Go for it.
Mainly it's myself. Now, this is actually the conversation. I'm not reading any copy. I don't have any ads written down or anything like that, but I'm pretty proud of this. This is something that I'm proud of and I want to talk about. I've built a thing, or I've managed to get people to build a thing. Something was really annoying me in the market. I've been the ETF guy for so long, and I still am the ETF guy, but there's always just been this real pain that I've had in my ass, which is the fact that my clients can't get easy access to the managed fund space globally. Getting access to managed funds here is relatively easy. That being said, I think it's still very clunky to put based on how it should be, you know, compared to how easy it is to buy and sell an ETF.
Yep.
Going in and out of a managed fund here locally is a real pain. Yes, so, and definitely overseas is a real hassle as well. So I've managed to put a team together and we've built a thing that enables you to be able to buy and sell, get access to buy and sell managed funds or have access to the up and down of the managed fund space.
Fantastic.
Especially, and this is the big clanger, in India. No one has access to India and we've built it and that's pretty cool. So it's called the Australian Mutual Funds Exchange, AMFEX for short, Alpha Mike, I forgot, Foxtrot Echo X-ray. And so AMFEX, I didn't get to pick the name, unfortunately. I got to pick a lot of stuff, but the name didn't. And all of a sudden you get to the end and you've got a name that sounds like the sort of thing that they used to shut down buildings for if it came in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a bad case of AMFEX, but at least you won't forget it. but yes, it's the Australian Mutual Funds Exchange. And we've built it so it gives you access to India. It's very cool.
Fantastic.
So if you like the Matthews Credit Growth Fund or something like that, that's only in India and only over there that you would never be able to get access to in Australia. You have to be in India, investing in India, unless you manage to jump through these hoops, which we managed to get done. So we've got the approval to actually invest to India directly, which is pretty
excellent.
Cool. So if you
that's
want to do that,
news.
Do it. Yeah, thank you. So I'm pretty proud that we've done that. We've built that. Go to the website, everyone. Have a login. You can start trading. It's set to go. It's ready.
Yep.
It's done. We've done it. I'm stoked. I can't believe that we managed to get here. And you know the best part too? It was ages ago, it was a couple of Ukrainian guys doing the build and they are phenomenal.
Fantastic.
So it was a little bit delayed because something happened last year and one of them actually went and fought. I don't know if he was frontline.
Oh, wow.
He's probably a bit more suited to actually doing the the coding and the hacking that these Ukrainian dudes are doing in the backstages. He's a bit more that side. So he's helping his family stay alive or helping his country remain a country.
Yep.
And then he got back to building. I said, okay, you got to get back to work now. I didn't say that. But the that's done. So built by Ukrainians, managed by me here, and we've got a thing. So go to the website, check it out, do whatever you can. It's It's going to be huge, and I'm so proud of it, and I'm so stoked, and it's going to be my big story for 2023.
Excellent. You should be proud. Everyone go check it out.
Yeah, yeah. Now, locally, commodities. What happened there?
I've been smashed a bit. Well, not smashed. I mean, come off a little bit of the boil. Reopening trade on China has unwound a little bit. And obviously, with everything that's happened during the week, I think people are just off risk a little bit, piling into bonds and jumping out of risk a little bit. The story really hasn't changed there. Chinese data this week came in very mixed. But like I've said before, it's too early for us to be expecting anything too much out of China. Some of their PMI data a couple of weeks ago was really strong, which is great. I'd expect that to remain strong. The Chinese government chucked in another 280 billion won into the MLF this week, which is the most they've done since December 2020. So they're really trying to get that credit cycle and those loans out there into the mainly into the construction and property sector. To really start getting their economy going. But I think it's going to be more a services and consumer-led-based recovery. We've got, similar to what we went through here, we've got a lot of consumers with a lot of money sitting in their bank accounts at the moment that want to go out there and spend it. And if you look at the travel numbers over there, the subway numbers, traffic congestion, et cetera, they're all rebounding really, really quickly back to pre-COVID highs.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that is the case, and that will continue to be the case, which is fantastic. I am looking at energy. I'm looking at these oil players and just thinking there's some steals out there, some absolute steals out there. The theory with this whole thing, and Morgan Stanley put it on their podcast, they put it on their note yesterday, just talking about the basic theory goes thus. There you go, big words for you on the new podcast, that if you've got heightened bank regulations that come in from this and reduced risk, that will flow through to reduced growth because lending is going to be tighter.
Yes.
And you need lending to be able to have growth. And so the reason why people have been going, okay, we need to revalue the risk that we've got is because they see global growth as retracting somewhat. That's the story. If you're wondering what's going on this week, that's what's going on this week. I personally say, you know what? I think that that's been overdone a bit. I think that you've got some great long-term players here and some amazing value in the energy space. And I do still stand by the fact that I think that oil is going to be, I think if you know, I don't know about $100. I hate putting a price on stuff because, you know, all of a sudden, then you got Ken who's just like, oh, it was only 99 instead of 100. Remember that? They had to send him an effing case of Heineken for that. Thanks a lot. It was a couple of bucks. It got to 100 like a few weeks into the year and I didn't get it by Christmas. Anyway, thanks. So, yeah, everyone, I was loud and proud with that idea too. But keep in mind, the oil was like $30 when I called it as well. So,
yeah.
Bottom of the basement thing.
I think you'll find a lot of analysts start downgrading their oil forecast for the year simply because of what's happened this week.
You reckon?
The fact that oil got smashed quite a bit. It's now in the high 60s. I said a few weeks ago we'd see a six handle on oil, and lo and behold, it's happened. I do believe we will see $100 again on oil. Maybe not this year, but definitely I think in the first or second quarter next year. I think the Chinese reopening story in terms of oil is a little bit skewed. They'll go for their they'll start using their SPR inventories, which are chockers at the moment, to sort of keep prices down, keep inflation intact over there while they reopen. And that reopening demand won't be seen until the second half of this year. So I think second half of this year is going to be a very good one for oil.
I think so too. I think it'll be higher.
Yeah.
I think it will be higher. Now, here's Nat Gas as well. Can you believe this? They are now, who was it? Morgan Stanley's energy guy. He's got a funny name. He's Scandinavian. I've forgotten his name.
I don't know.
Super smart. Yeah. Super smart guy was talking about it. He was just like, can you believe it now that we've gone from European holders, so stockpiles of Natty, have gone from being where we've run out to now they've got a topping situation. They're actually oversupplied with nat gas.
Yep.
So that's now the part of the cycle where it's like, okay, this is the top in stockpiles. Do you call them stockpiles? What do you call them?
Inventories.
Anyway, fine. Yeah. Okay. Yep. So European inventories are through the roof. They actually literally now can't store anymore. So that does it puts heaps of confidence in the fact that Russia doesn't have any power in the war anymore. And probably will continue to do stuff in the oil market, whatever they can do with the oil market to try and stuff everyone up in that regard. But so watch out for Natty.
I think, the end of the year, sorry to cut you off. I think towards the end of the year, it's going to be a big problem for them again. They got lucky this year in terms of very mild weather, and they just threw everything at it. I don't think they can do that twice in a row. So I think,
especially since the cycle now is turning, because this is sort of what I was saying, is that because it's now topped up and supplied, so now the suppliers actually have to switch around and either supply somewhere else or cut it back because it's just not worth doing it anymore. No. What is Rob Rennie? Rob Rennie's got a great quote, which is commodity prices are solved by themselves. I think I'm paraphrasing him on that one. High prices get solved by, you've got high prices and supply comes online, and then you've got low prices, supply comes offline and that resolves itself. So that's going to be seen, I think, in Europe.
Yep. And they can't, whilst they've done a great job, I saw the gas import figures versus what they usually import from Russia to start the year. They were pretty close. They were able to import most of what they normally get from Russia. But I don't think they can do that twice in a row. There's still a ways away with having the infrastructure there to be totally off the Russian grid. And, you know, they're likely not to have as mild a winter again next time around. It'll probably be, obviously, it looks, you know, if all the things line up like the weather experts are saying, the climate experts are saying, that next winter is going to be probably a brutal one for them. So,
yeah,
I think they're going to have trouble next year, that may be one to watch in terms of a trade.
All right. Have you got anything else? Because I've got nothing else, and it's Friday and it's 11 o'clock and, you know, I've got some stuff to do.
No, I just fired up the footies back. I sat back last night and watched the Richmond Blues game, and it was an okay game. The last few minutes were pretty good, but I'm just happy footy's back on our screens. Some footy is better than no footy.
And, some footy is better than no footy.
I think your Swannies will have another very good year. I think top four is almost a certainty for them. My Crows, I think, if we can get 10 wins for the year, I'll be really, really happy with that.
That's set a low bar, mate. I think that's fine.
Exactly.
I have a friend whose son is in the Swans Academy.
Yep.
And he was saying, so every now and then they get to go and train with them and just do some weight session in the gym with them. They've been with the academy for a while, and they've never seen a more focused group of guys to make up for for the disappointment of that final last year or this year.
Yeah, it was really a non-event, and they really didn't fire a shot last year, unfortunately. I thought they were going to win, but obviously that didn't play out. So, I think I have no doubt they will be back up there. They've got a fantastic squad.
Yeah, very, very, very focused, my Swatties. That's good. I've been watching the league. League's been fantastic. It's just some absolute barn-burning games going on as well. So we've got Geelong, Collingwood. I'm just going to read them out. You tell me who's going to win. Geelong, Collingwood?
Cats.
North versus West?
North.
Port versus Brisbane?
Brisbane.
Good. Port suck. Melbourne Bulldogs? If you're a Port Adelaide supporter... I don't want your demographic. Switch off the podcast now. Okay. Take your business elsewhere. Just stay away. Melbourne Bulldogs, was it?
D's. Yeah. I think Melbourne D's. Win that.
I reckon the Swans are going to have some trouble with Gold Coast. It's their bogey turn.
No. Swans will win that easy.
What else we got? Was that the GWS? So Giants versus, that's next.
No, Sunday. GWS versus Crows. I'm not confident there. I think GWS will knock us over. They're our bogey team. We've lost to them twice over the last 2 years by 10 goals or more. So,
Why does Port have two games in the same weekend?
I don't think they do. I think you're... what you're reading.
I'm looking at Google, mate. It's coming off the thing. It's got Port Adelaide versus Brisbane tomorrow at 4:35. And then it's got Port Adelaide versus GWS on Sunday, the 19th of March.
That's
an error. And then it's got GWS versus Adelaide.
Yep. I think GWS win that one, unfortunately.
Giants get that. Hawthorne versus the Bombers.
Bombers. Yep.
And Saints versus Frio.
I think this is going to be a real close one. I think Frio will get over the line, though.
Yeah. But my tipping has been abysmal. Like one of the first, I won the tipping comp that I was in 2 years in a row. And it was getting to the stage where I don't think I was going to get invited back. and so I just didn't care last year, and I've sort of lost the touch now, he says, as if I could pick and choose.
Tanking for draft. You're tanking for draft picks.
I was tanking so I get invited back. This, you know, this happened to me when I was in an NRL tipping comp where you had to pay. It was $50 a head with all the boys, and they all went to Leo's, one of the schools that's up on the north, up on the north side. Mm-hmm. And I was the only one that didn't. They've had this tipping comp for ages. Huge thing, big end of season. One of those classic end of season sort of things where they spend all the money and it's all just fantastic. You know, the winner gets a couple of $100, which is pretty big money for us young men back then.
Yep.
And I was going to, it was always really tense, always, and I'd be sort of middle of the ground, you know, maybe third or fourth or something like that, and nowhere near as good. I was going to Europe with the wife and I pre-set all of my tips. So I just went, you know what, I've got four or five weeks of tips. Now, you didn't have to pay your money until round five.
Yep.
And when I got back from Europe, I had tipped 7 out of 8 or 6 out of 7 or however many games there were, but 2 perfect rounds as well. And so I was about 15 points ahead of anyone else. Do you think any of those guys paid their money, or do you think they just said tipping comps over, Jimmy's out? And they did. And I was just like, I can't, like, I absolutely robbed.
Yep.
Blind.
Yep. And unfortunately for your East Coast listeners, especially those in New South Wales and Queensland, I have no interest in rugby or NRL or anything. I do not understand, or I do understand the game. It just doesn't. I remember in the 90s going to a couple of Adelaide Rams games when the Super League was around.
Oh, hey, bring it back.
They had the Super League. I got free tickets to that future. I almost fell asleep on the hill watching that game. So I rugby is not for me. I've tried to get into it. I can't get into it, unfortunately. So
COVID switched me around.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. COVID switched me around. I was a huge AFL fan, used to play, and then COVID, rugby league, they made it interesting, I don't think the AFL did. So that's sort of, I'm sticking to that. I watch the Swans games and I watch the NRL. That's how I go.
Beautiful.
Mate, that's all that we got time for. Thank you very much for your participation and your ongoing presence.
Thanks for having me on.
It's going to be great, the way that we continue through with this way, and backed by our sponsorship partner, Amfex. If you've got a case of Amfex, come and talk to me. But the Australian Mutual Funds Exchange, it's going to be big. It's going to be huge. Go and check out the website. Do a login. If you want to chuck some money in, whatever it is, but please come back with feedback. I want to know if there's any bugs, because I don't think there is. I've tested this hard, and I want to get some feedback on exactly what you think of it. And thank you very much for them for sponsoring the show. It's basically me sponsoring the show, so that's how it goes.
Beautiful.
Mate, that's it. Thanks very much.
No worries, thanks, and we'll speak next week.
Okay, mate. Bye. You can find us on iTunes at The Bip Show or wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Twitter at @_Bip_show and we're on Facebook too. Just search for The Bip Show. I've got a website. Just Google Whelan Capital. It's got all of the links and all of the documents that you want to know. Individually, I am at JamesWhelan42 on Twitter. The show is produced by whoever I could find on the day. Thank you very much. We'll catch you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.